As the 1950s faded, London was excellent but exhausted. The British were tired of rain, ration books, and asking Americans for nylons and chocolate. They were proud about beating back Nazis, but they'd saved the world only to cast off their empire. But then came the 1960s.
They seek him here, they seek him there, in Regent Street and Leicester Square. Everywhere the Carnavician army marches on, each one a dedicated follower of fashion.
Kinks, dedicated follower of fashion, 1966. During that decade, London exploded with invention and exuberance. British music, including the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, became the soundtrack of a new generation around the world. British cinema, banking on talents from Richard Lester, Nicholas Rogue, to Terence Stamp and Michael Caine, opened eyes in the dark. British fashion, from Mary Quant, bell-bottoms and miniskirts, to Twiggy, Jean Shrimpton and Vidal Sassoon, became trendy, alongside with names from British theater and literature, just too numerous to recount. Sean Levy has written a history of that period in which Britain invented a new sense of itself, then sent it around the world. It's called Ready, Steady, Go, The Smashing Rise and Giddy Fall of Swinging London. Sean Levy, who's written previous scholarly volumes about Jerry Lewis and the Rat Pack, is also a film critic for the Oregonian newspaper. He joins us from the studios of Oregon Public Broadcasting. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
What was there in Britain's despair that helped create this flowering?
I think it was a combination of having been repressed for such a long time. We think of the stiff upper lip and the done thing. And then the weight off its shoulders of no longer being a superpower. You know, you could just if you weren't the older son who inherited the kingdom, you could kind of kick your shoes off and relax.
It was a fact that Britain had to turn to what used to be referred to as the lower classes. We would now say maybe aggrieved social classes to win the war. Liverpudlians, Mancusians, as people from Liverpool and Manchester are called, Cockneys. Did those groups lead some of this new flowering?
Oh, in fact, they defined it. The very drab thing to be was middle class. That was the culture that was most shaken by the revolution of the 60s. You could be very, very posh and be hip in the 60s, or you could be very, very common, as they might say, or from a lower class, an East End boy like Vidal Sassoon, David Bailey, the photographer, Terence Stamp, Michael Caine from South London. You could be someone from a northern city, like many of the rock stars, the Beatles, the Animals, the Hollies were all from the north.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you something.
Sean, it's still good, isn't it?
It's amazing how good they are. I think they'd be hits if they were released today. The sound is sharp. The playing is good. I remember being in my great-grandmother's kitchen in Brooklyn. She was born in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and she was clapping along to these songs on the radio. And you could, if you were in any generation, appreciate the appeal of that sound.
The Beatles seemed cuddly, I think we can fairly say. As the decade went on, their work often got more complicated and dark. But in the early 60s, they seemed cuddly. That was not the image that was struck by the Rolling Stones, was it?
No, and they specifically define themselves as anti-Beatles. The brilliant ad line which their manager, Andrew Lou Goldham, came up with was, "Would you let your daughter marry a Rolling Stone?" And, you know, the Stones couldn't even get their pictures in the paper because photo editors were horrified at the look of them.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
You suggest that Americans listening to this music were flabbergasted, maybe even a little humble, to discover that British people could make music that had so much of the energy, and I'm even going to say the soul, of American artists like Muddy Waters, Chuck Berry, and Buddy Holly.
Yeah, and you know, the British acts were astounded. Bill Wyman told me when they first came to America, the Stones, and people were excited about the Stones' music. The Stones were kind of embarrassed because they were imitating the American sound that they grew up listening to.
But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game.
As you explained, Regent and Bond Street, let's say if we're talking New York blocks, might be 10 or 12 blocks away from each other. But the difference between Regent and Bond Street and Carnaby Street?
Well, you could go to a Savile Row or a Bond Street tailor and take 16 fittings for a suit, and you would be treated as if you were in a formal men's club. Carnaby Street became a series of shops which were in competition with each other to do something new and trendy. So you could go to Carnaby Street and find something that no one else you knew had. And it was cheap. It didn't last very long, but it didn't make a difference because by the time you wore it out, it would be out of fashion anyhow.
Mm-hmm. And this was something new for the British experience, wasn't it? I mean, young men used to buy suits to last 30 years.
Right. They had three styles of suits, small, medium, and large. It was not there was always a dandy tradition, but it was always, you know, an upper-class eccentricity. Now the dandy tradition was coming up from the bottom. It was working kids, mods, and people interested in pop music or the theater who were wearing the daring stuff on the streets, and the upper classes were copying them.
Hmm. Is there any relationship between ration books and the invention of the miniskirt?
There is. Barbara Hulanicki, who designed miniskirts for years at the great Biba Boutique, said, you know, the post-war babies were denied protein and they grew up into these wonderful, tall, slender creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Another fellow told me a lot of tough kids made it through the war. And I think that there was something about, you know, that sort of lean and hungry look that defined who the Brits were at the beginning of the 60s.
Did this period, with the advantage of hindsight, have the effect of lifting Britain out of its cups, in a sense, and reconnect it to modern culture?
Oh, yeah, very much so. For 7 or 8 years, I think the British self-esteem had increased dramatically. The economy wasn't very well managed. The Labour government, who came in with the Profumo scandal at the beginning of the swinging 60s, had pretty much botched everything up by the end of the decade. But during that time, the idea that the hottest band in the world was British, that everyone was wearing British fashion or British haircuts, that, you know, the coolest thing you could do if you were an American was fly over to London and, you know, check out the scene. You know, there was still a great party going on. That's one of the real dichotomies of it. A commentator in 66 referred to England sinking, giggling into the sea. And that's part of the reason why the swinging London period gave way to hippie in California and the States.
Sean, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
Sean Levy, the author of the new book, Ready, Steady, Go, The Smashing Rise and Giddy Fall of Swinging London.
I can go anyway without you.